everybody. Welcome. My name is Mary McKenzie, and I'm a certified trainer of nonviolent communication and also the co-founder of NVC Academy. And I want to welcome you to this fishbowl. Our topic today is seeing how privilege or lack of privilege affects women. And in this conversation, we have five people who will be our fish. And that means that they're the ones who are having the conversation with each other. And the rest of us are on the outside witnessing the conversation. The symbology, think about if you have goldfish in a bowl and they're swimming around and you're on the outside watching them. That's what these fish are doing. They're swimming around with each other and having a conversation about this topic, privilege or lack of privilege and how it affects women. So I want to explain the different roles in the fishbowl. There's three really important roles. One of them is the fish. I already talked about that. They're the people who have the conversation. The other is the witness. And that's most of us on the call will be the witnesses. And that also is an important role because that role is about witnessing what's being said, trying to internalizing it, trying to understand it, maybe making connections between what the fish have said and your own lives, and learning from it. And the third role is the moderator. And your moderators today are Dean Killian, and Dean will be introducing herself in a moment, and myself. So in this fishbowl, we decided to have two moderators. So Dean and I will be doing this together, sharing the role. At the end of our fishbowl, there'll be about 20 minutes where the witnesses will have time to ask their own questions. So throughout the fishbowl, if things are coming up for you, feel free to chat your responses, or if you have questions, send them in the chat and Robin will be collecting those and help you with them. So in the beginning, the fish will introduce themselves, just take a few minutes, and then Dean and I will, as the moderators, will be asking questions of the fish, and they'll be interacting and answering those questions. And the last 20 minutes will be the time for everybody else to ask their questions. My name again is Mary McKenzie. I'm a certified trainer of nonviolent communication and the co-founder of the NVC Academy. This topic has kind of been important for me in the last few months. I attended kind of not thinking it was going to be a big deal. I attended a workshop about 6 months ago, or maybe it was a year ago, by Tim Wise, who is a person who talks about race and privilege. And I was kind of blown away by this 4-hour conference that he did. I was absolutely blown away. The thing that blew me away was, first of all, the hundreds of small ways that I didn't even connect privilege with my life experience. And equally, the number of ways that I was unwittingly being complicit to maintain an uneven status quo without even thinking about it. It was the lack of knowledge that I had that blew me away, because I think of myself as such an open-minded, avid reader and caring person about all people. I was blown away by the levels of lack of clarity I had about it. And so it started to awaken in me this desire for more. And along with that, frankly, it awakened in me a ton of mourning, of my own mourning, of my own life experience, and also how I was contributing. And so how I've seen this imbalance of privilege show up in my life, I've made a few notes of a few things. When I was a real young person, my brothers were altar boys and paper boys, and that wasn't available to women or to girls. In our PE class in school, in grade school, the boys had full access to the fields and the gym, and the girls' PE class was relegated to the stage, so we had very little room to actually play a sport of any kind. In fact, we weren't encouraged to play sports at that time. And my mother, when she served meals, she always served the oldest male first, and then she would go to the next oldest male and the next oldest male. And then she would go to the oldest female and then the next female. And I had four older brothers and a father in my family. And I was the youngest of seven children. So by the time it got down to me, it was clear that my role had the lowest value of the family. It was just how I internalized it. It was clear to me that the boys in my family had greater a greater position in the family, I guess you'd say. Also, being Catholic, the nuns at that time were cleaning and cooking for the priests. And my job in high school was to clean my older brother's bedrooms. So they didn't need to clean their bedrooms. I needed to clean their bedrooms. Then as I grew older, I started to see opportunities pass by because of my gender to people who were men but had less experience or knowledge of the field than I did. I saw that over and over. I saw men paid more for positions than I was. And I tried all kinds of things in my younger days, in my, I would say, mid-30s and before, to try to rectify that, to try to find balance in it, not with very much success. And one of the positive things I want to say about my life was when I was in my 30s, I met a woman. Her name was Sister Catherine Gray. And Sister Catherine started to teach me about feminine power in a way that nobody had ever done before. And I will forever thank her for that. She said this hard comment to hear. She said, "Mary, I keep seeing you dressing like and trying to act like a man. But you're not a man and you never will be. And so this is a hopeless task you're involved in. I would love to see you embrace your femininity and find the power in that." And I watched her for about 5 years embrace her femininity. It was amazing to me. So she was an inspiration to me about being full on in my skin, though it's been a lifetime since then to actually live it. So I am happy to be here with you. I am happy to open this door to have this conversation. And I want to tell you what our working definition of privilege is, and then I'm going to turn it over to Deanne to introduce herself. So those of you who have been to all the fish bowls know that the definition has changed every time, and it changed again. So my new definition, as I see it, is privilege is a systemic bias, that favors and gives advantage to people for things that the person generally didn't choose or have choice about, like gender, race, sexual orientation, place in society. So generally didn't have choice about it. So that's kind of how I'm holding this conversation today. So Deanne, please introduce yourself. I'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, Mary. Well, first of all, I want to say I'm really celebrating that when you asked me to facilitate this fishbowl, that I immediately asked you to co-facilitate with me. I really enjoy co-facilitation. I think there's, you could say more about that, but a lot of power in that. But what's most alive for me around that now is just so grateful to have heard you share some of your stories and to get to know you in a different way. And I really appreciate what I'm hearing is your vulnerability and resonate a lot with experiences that you shared. So I wanna thank you first of all for that. And for those of you who are meeting me for the first time, either digitally or in person, my name, as Mary said, is Deanne Killian. I live in New York City. I'm very proud to say that I am a certified trainer with the International Center for Nonviolent Communication. And I also have written a couple of books. One of them I've co-wrote with Jane Connor called Connecting Across Differences. And the other book is called Urban Empathy, True Life Adventures of Compassion on the Streets of New York. And by the way, for those on the call who are interested in these questions of privilege, those questions are very much addressed, in my opinion, in both of those books, especially Urban Empathy. So I encourage you to check that out if you haven't already, because I use NVC to address these issues in that book. So that's a little bit about me. And I'm so glad that Mary organized this fishbowl. For me, it's been a lifelong journey to develop awareness of how my gender and gender expression has really profoundly impacted me directly in terms of how other people treat me, and also in terms of unconsciously about decisions that I make, often in response to how other people treat me. When Mary and I were preparing for the call, I remember, you know, for me, one of my earliest experiences, and my parents have reminded me of this story throughout my life. When I was about 5, I saw a fire truck and I said to my parents, "I wish I could be a spotty dog," i.e. a Dalmatian. And my parents said, "Why do you want to be a dog?" I said, "Because I want to ride on a fire truck." Mm-hmm. It is so sad and poignant for me. I almost feel a little teary sharing this, that as a 5-year-old, I already had gotten that there were certain areas of society that were shut off from me it was easier for me to imagine being a dog than a woman on a fire truck. Mm. And that hasn't changed that much. I know in New York City, there are women in the fire department, not that many. And I have had repeated experiences in my life where I don't go through every day thinking, oh, I'm a woman, I'm gonna be treated differently. But then I'll have an interview, or in graduate school, I had a certain experience. And it wasn't until after that I reflected on it, I was like, wait a minute, I didn't see this professor treating the men in the class this way. And speaking of graduate school, part of my journey made such an impression on me. When I was working on my PhD, I was reading Shelley's Frankenstein. And in the introduction of that book, Shelley really, in my opinion, has some fierce judgments of herself, and goes on at length and saying, I'm not doing enough. I'm not using my life to its full potential. And I just wanted to reach out to her through the decades and say, you're a woman living in Victorian England. And little do you know, you've created a story, Frankenstein, that's become timeless. But that kind of self-criticism, and I've seen it myself, that was a reminder of we don't always see how we're impacted by our society. So I have one more story I want to share, which is, you know, often around things like, sexism and racism, sometimes it can be challenging to find an observation. And then sometimes it astounds me how clear it is. I've definitely had an experience my whole life of being impacted by gender expression. As a lesbian, as a queer person from a very young age, even before I knew that I was queer, I was getting continual messages that I was not presenting in a way that my family and others were expecting as, quote, a woman. In lots of ways, in terms of my physical appearance, also in terms of having ideas and being smart. You know, I'd be told I was smart, but then at other times I could tell that, you know, oh, I was saying too much or had too many opinions, but I didn't notice that would be expressed about my brother, for example. But I think one of the most tangible experiences I've had around this is for several years when I was running a nonprofit, the office manager we were employing was a trans man. So he grew up as a woman, as a lesbian, and then transitioned to become a man. And there was one day we had a contractor who I was interviewing contractors to do some work to the building. And the contractor came in and the office manager was there. And I noticed how much the contractor was making eye contact with the office manager. And I would ask a question and he would respond to the office manager. At one point I actually said directly to the contractor, I want you to know that I'm the director of the nonprofit and I own the building that this nonprofit is housed in. So I'm gonna be making the decisions about who I hire and what work gets done. It kind of astounded me even with that point, how I continued to dialogue with the office manager. When the contractor left, I turned to the office manager and I said, I'm wondering if you're okay if you ask me a question, if I ask you a question that has to do, you know, with your experience of being a trans man. And he said, sure. And I said, well, I'm just curious if you noticed what happened with that contractor. And he said, absolutely. He was basically ignoring you. And then I said, I'm wondering, how has your experience changed in life since you became a man? And by the way, this person, in my opinion, passes very well. On testosterone, already had a pretty masculine expression. No one would ever guess this person was a cis female, grew up as a cis female. And he said to me, my life has changed dramatically. I get so much more respect. People listen to me differently since I went into a gender expression as a male. So whenever I wonder if I'm imagining something, I think back on that experience and I can reassure myself, I'm pretty convinced a good part of the time I'm not imagining it. And even with my level of education and being white and being middle class and all the skills and resources I have I have been repeatedly impacted in my life by how people perceive me and expect me to be because I express in a quote, female gender expression.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you very much for your sharing. I appreciate it. So I am now going to move into introducing each of the fish and asking them to briefly introduce themselves. So I'm expecting their introductions to last a total of about 3 minutes, and then we'll jump in and we'll start asking questions. Madi, go ahead. Please introduce yourself, 30 seconds or less.
Okay, hi, I'm Madi Mihalcea from Bucharest, Romania. I'm a certification candidate with the Center of Nonviolence Communication and co-founder of NBC Connect. I'm really happy and grateful for being here and having the opportunity to discuss on this subject and contribute to it, because since I've discovered it, I deepened my healing in my relationship with men. So thank you very much for this opportunity and bringing up this topic.
Thank you, Madi. I'm going to go to Stephanie next and then Julie. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Hi, I'm Stephanie. I am in San Francisco. I grew up in Louisiana and came here by way of Houston and Dallas. I'm very interested in intersectionality with women's issues in terms of privilege, because that has been my experience as a woman of color. I am just looking forward to this conversation and what I will learn and what I'll be able to contribute and what will come together and be able to build and learn as truth.
Thank you, Stephanie. Julie and then Louisa.
Hi, I'm Julie Rogers and I live in Richmond, California, which is in the Bay Area. And I am hoping to learn about, to learn and to contribute also. I've been studying or working on white privilege and racial justice a lot lately. And so focusing specifically on women again is a really interesting thing for me to do now. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks, Julie. Louisa and then Suzanne.
Thank you, Julie, for saving me a few seconds, because I also come out of that. And I'm from the Washington, D.C. area, states. I'm in touch right now with just a lot of turmoil, because I have experienced so much privilege in my education and whiteness. And I guess I've suppressed a lot of the gender stuff. And what I know about vulnerability is, and cleaning up any mess, is that getting it out sometimes is always the first step for cleaning it up. So I'm the only daughter of three sons and broke every gender issue I could, went to an all-male college, went into a career mostly men, and have doubted myself for 40 years and brought as much privilege as I could and awareness to wanting for others the belonging and respect, especially across racial differences. I need to take a breath here. Wanting for others what I had so longed for myself for so many years as the girl child, wanting to be heard and to be seen. So it was easier for me to want that for others. I hope this makes sense. And it's probably 30 seconds. Thank you for letting me unpack a little bit with you.
Thanks, Louisa. And Suzanne.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Meyer Fitzsimmons. Thank you for including me in this conversation. I love critical cultural inquiry. That's why I chose to participate. I'm an author, blogger, holistic adventurer, gentle activist, cultural critic. I live in New York's Hudson Valley. And my book, Deep Living, Healing Yourself to Heal the Planet, just came out. So I'm really interested in the subject of green living, sustainability, compassionate conversation, and really compassionate living with everybody, for everybody else's interests, not just living in a predatory way. Besides spiritual and cultural matters, I love food, travel, and good conversations.
Thank you, Suzanne. I want to thank all five fish. Thank you for being in this role. I know it's an act of vulnerability to be, in the fishbowl talking about things that matter to you. So I appreciate you being here. And Deanne, I'm going to turn it over to you to get us started in asking questions.
Great. Well, I want to also thank everyone for being on the call today, feeling grateful and already moved. So here's the first question that I'd like to put to the fish. How have you experienced privilege or a lack of privilege in your life. And I'd love for you to reflect on the first moment that you recall when you woke up to the realization, the fact that you may be experiencing less privilege in your life, or maybe more privilege. And what experience exemplifies that for you? I'd like to see a show of hands on the fish who would like to speak, and we'll hear from maybe two or three people on this first question. So I see Stephanie's hand up. Stephanie, why don't you start, please?
Yes, I did not realize that there was a difference seen between myself and possibly a male until it came time for me to get my driver's license. And I was 16, I believe, and my parents, to my surprise, did not want me to get a driver's license because I was a girl. They thought it was unsafe. And I couldn't believe this. They hadn't indicated any difference in treating us differently than they might if we were boys before then. But I literally had to argue and, you know, fight tooth and nail to be able to get to take my tests. They thought it was too dangerous. They just really thought as a woman, it was just not a smart thing. So that was the first time I really experienced something that was obvious to me, that there were different expectations, and especially coming from my family, it was very surprising.
Thank you. I just want to see, before we move on to hear from someone else, if there's another fish who would like to comment or even recap. I would love to hear a recap of what Stephanie shared and then see if there's any comments. So I know we have some hands up already, but if you would like to comment or recap, please raise your hand if you're one of the fish. Actually, what I'm going to do, because I'm not seeing any hands, I'm going to call on Madi next. And Madi, would you be willing to start by just giving a brief recap of what you heard Stephanie share?
Yeah, sure. So I've heard Stephanie recalling how her parents, from their need of security for her, had an issue with her having a driving license. And this was very different from a male. So this is what I've heard, the frustration of wanting something and not being able to fulfill that need of flexibility, maybe because of her gender.
Yeah, and being treated differently.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the recap. What's the experience you would like to share on this question, Madi?
I would like to share my first time when I was aware of the difference, when I experienced both privilege and lack of privilege. It was in primary school when I realized that the teachers were asking for help from the boys in the class to pick up books, to move maps in the geography class, and so on and so forth. And that, I saw it as a privilege because, okay, I'm a girl and I don't have to do to this stuff. I don't get dirty. I'm safe. I can do everything I want in this time when around me is a mess. At the same time, in the same period, I experienced the lack of privilege because I couldn't play with boys with their cars and Lego. My parents didn't want to buy me cars and Lego, and I was fascinated by the boys playing outside and having roads, drawing roads down, and oh my God, I was so sad. It was about the clothes that my mom was choosing for me, because I was always crisp and I couldn't become dirty in playing. So yes, That is my experience, my first experience with privilege in the primary school. Thank you.
Madi, thank you for this example. The one you give about the classroom is really bringing to my awareness about how, in my opinion, sexism and misogyny functions in our society. You know, traditionally like a man holding the door for a woman in a way that could look like a privilege or an advantage, that we're being given preferential treatment. At the same time, in my opinion, that's communicating something that, you know, we're weaker. And it's like this double-edged, you know, sword, like on one hand being treated, it seems like, with respect. And at the same time, there's an unconscious message that, oh, you can't move the maps because maybe you're not strong enough. So it's an interesting dynamic.
Yes. I have a comment to that with holding the door. I think it depends on the other messages that the man is showing. For example, my partner keeps the door for me, but I know I've known from the first time that it was from his willingness to see me all around, to see me when I enter, that I'm safe, that I'm there with him, and because I see it in his eyes even now. So yes, it's more about the environment and the experience as a whole.
So you can trust his intention based on the quality of connection you have. Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you. I'm going to ask for one more fish to respond to this question. I think Suzanne, I saw your hand up before the other, so we have a few hands up, but Suzanne, I'm going to ask you to reply.
Sure. Well, I grew up middle class in Germany, France, and Belgium, and feel that I've experienced a lot of privilege through education and travel and cultural conversation in a very liberal and atheist home. When I came over to the United States, I found a different culture here. I found a lot of boys dressing in the muted tones of blues and grays, and I found that the girls stuck to pinks and purples. I did not experience that in Europe at all. I came to a completely different world here in the States. I really came to a divided male-female world. That was not the case in Europe. I've also found that my husband, who grew up in a Catholic family, treats girls differently than boys. So he treats our daughter, and he says it, like a China doll. And that comes from his upbringing. I did not grow up that way. We grew up, my parents specifically, deliberately bought us trains, Legos, chemistry boxes, early computer types of arrangements that we could play with. So I grew up in a world where I had choices. I was not slotted into a box. And my sister and I ended up playing with dolls and all kinds of things naturally. And my parents were amazed about it. They said, "We gave you all of these boy toys and you don't want them." So they were amazed by that. So we were still formed by culture. But the world that I came to over here when I was 22 was definitely gender biased, much more than I grew up with.
I'm going to check if... I would just like to check if there are any fish who would like to comment on anything that the three fish have shared so far before we move on to the next question. If you do have a comment, just raise your hand. Okay, Julie.
Yeah, I just want to share in reaction to what Suzanne said. I moved around a lot as a foreign service kid when I was growing up, and the first years that I remember were 5 years in Europe. And it's interesting to me to hear you saying, Suzanne, that things were very different there, because I don't actually remember noticing sexism until I was 19 and lived in South America. But I'd also lived in Mexico growing up, and I noticed some there, but it didn't really hit me as sort of a, as something that happened in the US until I was on my own away from my family in South America and then came back to the States. And then I was like, okay, I get it that it's here too. Mm. Thank you for and helping me understand that in Europe, maybe it was different when I was there. Mm.
Thank you. And I just want to comment, Suzanne, I appreciate you bringing up the doll question. I actually have some compassion for my mom because she loved dolls growing up and I'm her only daughter. And she had great joy making little outfits for Barbie dolls when I was little. And I had zero interest in dolls. My favorite toy was like a stuffed dog. And, you know, I was given a dollhouse. I wasn't interested in dolls at the dollhouse. I wanted to just decorate the dollhouse. I was about interior design. But for me, that was also an early experience where I got a very clear message that I was interested in things that I wasn't supposed to be interested in as a girl. And I was disappointing my mom because I was not interested in dolls. So, and no one gave me boy toys, but just to give an alternative experience on that, because I think that's one of our, my experiences, it's one of our first early experiences about like clothing that we're given and the toys that we're expected to play with and just expectations there. So I think Mary's going to ask the next question.
Thank you, Deanne. I'm curious if you think it's hard for women to talk about privilege. And if so, what do you think the challenges are for us to even bring any of this up? Please raise your hand if you'd like to comment on it. Go ahead, Louisa, and then Madi.
I've just been taking in everyone's stories and remembering more and more, sort of like the suppression of ways, the messages I got that I was in some ways needed protection. And so I guess what's hard is for me is having been so motivated to be seen and heard among three brothers and in the world, to understand how that energy and motivation wasn't really power in a funny way. I remember once some tests saying that women often go for affection instead of respect. And I think I found power in the world by being warm and relational and good. And that feels powerful. And it's hard for me to confuse that and privilege because my privilege was earned by taking care of others. And yet there's a way in which that has backfired on me and on many women, I think, for having not being invited early and often into self-care and self-responsibility, which I think is where, I'm sorry, this is too intellectual, which is a more sustainable kind of power. So, so I never knew I had privilege, as a woman. In fact, I still don't until I began doing racial justice work, and it really hit me in the face how much I do have. I think I just shifted, but I think I'm going to stop and see where that might take us.
Thank you, Louisa. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Louisa. I'm going to go to Madi next. What about you, Madi? Do you think it's hard for women to talk about privilege? And if so, why?
Yes, it's hard for a number of reasons. But I would like to clarify that it's more my experience, personal experience here. So I'm not talking about all the women. From my point of view, we spent all our energy on blaming men world for our lack of privilege. So we don't have any time or energy to count our blessings and to also be aware of men's lack of privilege. And it would mean also to acknowledge that men experience vulnerability too, like deep sadness, like hopelessness, like despair. From what I've seen so far, men have only one option when they experience this kind of feelings: anger. They can't cry in public. They can't say, "I can't do it. I can't do it. I don't know how to do it." Okay. If you watch movies from this perspective, the women are those who ask, "What shall we do?" And the man comes strong, this, this, and this, okay? And we believe, I think is another reason would be that we believe it would be too hard or almost impossible. We lack this hope to create a world where men and women express their vulnerability in an open and trusty way. And we also aim for equality. We want, as women, men's privilege. But my question is, are we truly ready to adopt that coin with both sides of it? This is a question I have now in mind. And for me, it's a clear no. I just would like to contribute for men to ease their lack of privilege, but not having their privilege and all that comes with it. I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mari. Suzanne, I see your hands up. I was just going to ask, so the question on the table is, do you think it's difficult for women to talk about the privilege? Or you could either respond to that, or you could respond to anything that's already been said in response to this question.
Well, I wanted to respond what Tumadi said, because it opened up the possibility for me to see our female ability to acknowledge and work with emotion and to show emotional intelligence as a privilege. And I'd never seen that before. So I really think that's a completely new way of looking at our own gender privilege. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Suzanne. Any of the fish have a comment about what's been said so far? Okay, I'm just going to comment on the thing about, is it difficult for women to talk about privilege? I find it very difficult, actually. There's a level of vulnerability that's attached to it for me. And how to open up that dialogue, especially if I'm speaking with someone who doesn't see it. So I remember trying to have conversations with my brothers about, and this was before NVC, could we not tell blonde jokes or jokes that are disparaging to women, at least in front of your sisters and nieces? Could we at least do that? And being received with a lot of anger and, oh, you're being overly sensitive and all kinds of stuff. And like I said, this was way before before I was an NVC trainer. Could we stop using the word pussy when we're referring to weak men? Could we, you know, I remember having these kind of conversations, and I find it very vulnerable to be able to be full on in. And most of, I think what happens to me is I'm so triggered myself that it's hard for me to hear them in the dialogue. It's hard for me to be full on in the dialogue. So Louisa, I see your hands up. I want to call on you and then Julie. And then we'll go to a different question.
Mary, I'm moved by what you said, to be able to, you know, show up without sounding whiny and blaming, but to claim it has always been hard. But I want to think about emotional intelligence and keep us on I think it's a huge resource that women have been allowed to develop, and a source of social capital and all. And yet I'm not sure it's a really, in the systemic world, of systemic bias. It's a privilege. It's not something I have felt respected for, although in my work in ministry, it was often the gift I brought to churches, but the money still went to men with business and management skills who could handle all the staff issues that, more obviously or more eagerly. So I'm just holding that as, yes, it's emotional intelligence is a fabulous resource for all of us to develop. And I'm not convinced it serves well in the economic systems that most of us, that I've functioned in. So I'll just leave that as a question. Julie, what kind of others?
Thanks. Thank you, Louisa. Julie, go ahead, and then I'm going to turn it over to Dean to ask the next question.
Thanks. I want to agree with what you said, Louisa, and then I wanted to, I'm trying to remember what, Mary, what you said that I was wanting to comment on. But Louisa, I agree that there is so much negativity in our society of the terms emotional and versus rational. And oh, I know what I was going to say, Mary, in addition to what you said, when I do say something to someone or when I have said something to a man through the years, I've had to justify, I've had to have a reason, like I've had to explain why it bothers me. And it's always been hard to explain that to somebody who really doesn't get it. And it occurs to me that throughout my growing up, I got that, and I don't think I ever linked it to being female before, but I got that, that you shouldn't be sad, or why are you hurt about this? And maybe it was more because I was female, but I also happened to be the most emotional person in my family. So I don't know. And was that because in the family I mostly grew up in, when my older sister was out of the house, there were two boys and one girl. Was it that I was the female, that I had most of the feelings, and then that got disparaged or at least questioned? Or was it just who I am? I don't know. I never thought of it as because I was female before.
Mm. Thank you, Julie. So I'm going to ask that we all just take a moment and notice how we're feeling and do the best that you can to not push any feelings that you're having away. It's okay that we're having this conversation. It's okay if we have feelings up for us. And we're strong enough and big enough to have these feelings and to have this conversation. And I also want to give Robin a moment. Robin sent me a text and said that there's some things in the chat room that she wants to express to the group. And then I'll turn it over to Deanne to ask another question. Go ahead, Robin.
Right, and just, I know everybody on video can read the chat, but people on the phone cannot, and people who are watching this video won't be able to. So I felt like it was important to add to this part of the conversation a few things that have been mentioned. I think it's challenging for women to talk about privilege because it's more challenging for the privileged people to listen to and acknowledge. So it's about how we're being heard in part. We are often heard as being whiny or emotional when we make these statements, even if we say them with no emotion in our voice and no whine in our voice. We might be perceived as a bitch. Yeah, and we're often told that we're imagining or exaggerating things. A chat says, I get responses of defensiveness, blame, as my words are interpreted as blame and an attack, when my words are really about the systemic nature, not about the man I'm in conversation with. It's one extreme or the other. We're either whiny, sensitive, or a bitch. Hard to be vulnerable enough to speak out with these perceptions. So it goes on and on, and people are commenting and saying, yes, I feel this way too. Low self-esteem, suffered because of unskillful responses to my emotional expression. So, and they keep going on, and I just wanted to share at least that part, Mary. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Robin, and thanks for those of you who are chatting. Dean, I'm going to turn it over to you. We have about 10 or 15 more minutes for this section. I'd love to get another question or two in.
Sure, thanks, Mary. Well, I just want to say briefly, I really appreciate, Mary, you're inviting us to bring our attention back to noticing what we're feeling in real time, and an opportunity for self-connection and self-empathy, because I'm guessing a lot could be really something stirred up for everybody listening. So thank you for that reminder. And I just want to say I'm so resonating what the fish and everyone has been sharing. And I just even want to name how the word bitch is used in our culture. And the very, you know, a bitch is a female dog, and what it means to be bitchy. And as women often told that we're being, quote, oversensitive. So just wanted to put that in the mix. So next question. I'm asking you, Fish, what would you want other women to know about privilege? And I'm going to put in too, what might you want men to know about your experience of privilege or lack of privilege as a woman? Speaking from your experience, and I also want to bring in intersectionality here. I'm really glad that Stephanie brought that in at the start of the call today. So what would you want other women to know about your experience of privilege, and how that maybe intersects with other ways that you're seen in society as a person of color, as a queer person, as maybe a working class person? So what would you want other women to know? What would you want other men or men to know? And if you'd like to speak to that, please raise your hand. And I just realized I'm going at a New York minute. I am a New Yorker, so I hope I was speaking slowly enough for people to get all that.
So I've unmuted Stephanie, Dean.
Thank you. Then
we'll go to Suzanne after Stephanie.
Hi. I have found that I have had some trouble. I don't know if anyone's familiar with Quiz Bowl, something that happens in high school. I was the only person of color, and I was the only woman on the team. All of us were in the gifted program. And I was constantly put in the position of defending my race, mm-hmm. and my sex for being there. Being told, you know, black people are only good for playing basketball, or, you know, more about that than sex, but definitely sex was something that was not subtle in the air. Another thing that I'm not sure really counts, but does happen, is experiencing privilege because of the way one looks. I have been both what is considered unattractive and attractive. Being a person of color and being seen as attractive by a person that is not of color in my generation was seen as pretty much impossible. Well, the generation before me was seen as pretty much impossible. If you were able to do that, you were seen as being, you know, sort of like a person of magic. That always struck me as strange. I remember being very surprised when I was home in Louisiana and these two little teenage boys looked up at me and sort of lost their breath because the way they responded to me and the way I looked. That was shocking because of, like I said, what I was taught about race and being approachable and attractive to the main culture. So I'm not sure if that's part of what we're talking about, but it's definitely something I experienced that I thought I might want to bring to the table. As for intersectionality, I think as a story I mentioned before, the people that I was on the Quiz Bowl team with and how they responded to both my race and my sex, I would say that would be the most prevalent thing in my mind.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Suzanne's yes. hand is up, and then Madi.
Thank you.
Well, I see privilege or lack thereof as a serendipitous circumstance we're born into. So it's usually not something we choose to, but we have to become aware of it, and then it can make for really interesting life stories. If we have privilege, it makes certain things easier, and that informs our life story. And if we lack privilege, that also informs in a much more gritty way our life story. And you can really work with that and make something out of it. So that's how I really see both aspects as contributing in a major way to who we are, who we become, how we do things in life. And it's very interesting. And if you look at life perhaps from the perspective of the possibility of reincarnation, it makes it even more complex and more interesting.
Madi, and if you want to respond to anything you've heard so far, and also what are your thoughts on this question?
I really liked Suzanne's reply, and I really resonate with her reply. And what I wanted to add first before hearing her is this, it's a difference right now, because I didn't experience this beach in my culture. I'm from Romania, so here when a woman says something, especially in the family, if the wife or the mother or the mother-in-law, then it's settled. It's more about the age rather than gender. And yes, it's a difference, so I can't relate to that. I know what it means in the American culture, but I can't relate to that because I haven't experienced it. At the same time, in my relationship with men, I experienced the power when they want it, because they don't say anything. They have only these two options, to submit or rebel. And when they submit to the older person or to the wife, because they want harmony. They do other things to take back their power, like physical power, violence, and verbal at some point. Or these things like I want to go out with my friends and I'm not allowed. Why do you want to go? Where do you want to go? And they camouflage this in jealousy crisis. So this one, and what I really like to stress out is this coin metaphor that I like to be aware of both privilege and lack of privilege, and to work on that both within ourselves and with the men in our lives, and then building on that. So this is my message to the other women. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Madi, for speaking to this. Do any of the fish have a comment on what you've heard the other fish share so far on this question?
Actually, Dan, I wonder how you'd feel about not getting their comments and giving us time to have to ask one more question.
Absolutely.
Would that work for you?
Yes. Go
Excellent.
For it, Mary.
So I'm curious about your thoughts about the beliefs that privilege, talking about privilege or using that word, is another way to shame people or perpetuates the divide between groups. I'm wondering if any of you have a comment on, specifically wondering about you, Julie, because we haven't heard from you in a while. I don't want you to feel pressure, but I'd love to hear your voice in the circle. Go ahead, Julie.
Happy to speak to that. I think that ignoring privilege increases the divide. I think that talking about it allows for the possibility of people being aware of it and decreasing the impact of it. I think the divide is already there. And if we don't talk about it, we're in more trouble. I like to think of the isms as something that are in the air that we breathe in the society and affect each of us and get each of us to act the way we do. So for example, sexism might invite a man to say some critical comment about a woman who's speaking up, or might get me to not say something when I want to speak up. I don't think of it, so I think of it more in the systemic way. And I also know that it can be heard as shaming, that it gets tends to be taken as an individual affront by the person in the privileged position. So I just like to emphasize that I'm not seeing this as you, I'm seeing this as you responding to a systemic presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like, I really like the distinction that I think you just made, that it's sometimes challenging to talk about it, because both sides, the woman in this case and the other person, can take it personally. Yeah. And that you're wanting to have a bigger conversation about the systemic biases that that led us to this place. Is that true?
What you're saying? Yeah, that we all get trained from when we're very tiny, and unless we're aware of it, we're not going to make choices that are based on our beliefs rather than on the beliefs that we're trained into.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. I appreciate your comment. And then we've got just about 2 minutes left, so I'm going to go to Stephanie and then to, well, I think Suzanne had her hand up first, so we'll go to Suzanne and then Stephanie, and then we'll close this out. And then we won't close it out. We'll go to questions from the witnesses. Go ahead, Suzanne.
Yeah, so I had never thought about privilege in that way before. And I think it's really interesting to think about it that way. And it actually makes total sense, because privilege creates a divide. It creates a mentality of I'm better than you because. On the other hand, I think in our present culture, it is now easier than at any time before in history to realize that and pull yourself up by the bootstraps and get beyond that and do something about it, because there is so much cultural awareness and dialogue.
Okay, thank you, Suzanne. Stephanie, go ahead.
Hi. As approaching intersectionality, being a person of color puts anyone on guard first when you're talking about mm-hmm. privilege. It's the first thing they see even before you get the woman. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I find it very difficult to speak to issues about women. I find people very shocked if I go to that first as opposed to race. And because of that, they really seem less inclined to listen to me. So I just wanted to point out the way race plays out in that atmosphere when people are afraid of acknowledging something where they might feel, let's say, insecure or vulnerable about. Mm. So it just makes it a more difficult conversation to have. Mm.
Thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate you saying that. And Louisa, do you have a quick comment before we move into questions?
What I want people to know about privilege is it's a shock sometimes to know we have it, and stories come up about not wanting to use it and wanting to be seen for who you are. And I just so want those of us involved in the NVC world, the resources we have to invite people to claim their power and the beauty of power and the inner resources we have and the skills we have to talk about outer resources and mobilize them. It's worth sorting through all the junk that comes up when we're sorting out race and gender and pain and the moment, guilt and anger. It's so worth it when we can find the power underneath it all. Hope that made some sense.
Mm, thank you, Louisa. Okay, Dia, now I think it's our time to take questions from the witnesses. I want to thank the witnesses. Thank you so much. I can tell there's been a lot of activity in the chat room, and I love that. I'm disappointed that I haven't been able to read it all. So, Robin, you want to tell us what your first question is to the fish?
Yes, Mary. The first question is, how do you see systemic violence towards women contributing to women's lack of privilege in society? Mm.
Dean, you want to field that with the fish? And I'll do the next one.
Sure. If you're a fish and would like to respond to that question, please raise your hand.
And Robin, would you say it one more time?
How do you see systemic violence towards women contributing to women's lack of privilege in society?
Go ahead, Julie.
Okay, I'll attempt. I don't see any way to, for women to really be able to express ourselves if we're afraid of violence. I think the first, my sort of awakening in South America about lack of privilege had to do with all the catcalls that I got. I was 19 years old, a student, alone away from my family for pretty much the first time, and catcalls and comments and people driving by assuming that I was a prostitute standing on the street corner. And part of that, of course, was because I was gringa, because I was from the US. But I also know, and also taller than pretty much everybody there, but also because of being female, and I saw that so much there. And it was scary. I was super scared. If there's this possibility that I'm going to be physically hurt, I'm not going to be able to speak up. And I'm not going to be able to take my own power and defend myself, especially when I haven't been taught that throughout my life.
Thank you. I really appreciate the point that I'm hearing you make. And it's just reminding me of all the violence in its different forms taking place in the world right now in relation to women. You know, from rape to economic differences to there being a committee of senators deciding the future of healthcare in the United States, and every single one of those committee members are men. Now, I know that's not physical violence, but I'm thinking about Marshall Rosenberg's definition of violence and, you know, nonviolent communication. Some people might even think communication is violent, but, and Marshall also made the connection, of course, between physical violence and, quote, verbal violence. So I'm just taking in all of that with what you're sharing and the catcalling. So thank you for that. Any other fish want to respond to this question about physical violence and the impact on women and privilege?
Will Robin.
Dean, I want to add just a couple of comments that have come up based on that question. One is the result of violence towards women is for women to live in fear, to put up with abuse, to be silent, to not have access to power and resources. There were a couple others I wanted to say. For example, systemic violence is making women responsible for men's behavior, violence, and assault. So telling there.
Okay, thank you. And I see Madi's hand is up. So Madi, go ahead, please.
Yeah, so I see the physical violence as a big factor in us as a society, thinking of us women as a weaker sex. So yes, it's the fear. Yes, it's the low self-esteem from childhood even. So yes, that, and now seeing in the comments, they say that, okay, men opening doors, these are advantages, or lifting packages, privilege. And yes, it depends on the intention. I would specify that it depends on the intention and also the perspective of each other. And I mean, me as a woman, I see that as a privilege. And again, like I said, it depends on the intention of the man. And yes, I experienced physical violence. When I was a child, I was almost raped. Mm. So I know what it means to feel weak and helpless. I was attacked twice in my teenage period. So I know what it means, this, what impact it has. Like shame, it was my fault. I was wearing, I don't know what blouse. I was, at the same time, when you get back together and stand, these for me, these experiences help me be stronger. This is just yes, I'm seeing myself right now trying to make a bridge between lack and of privilege and privilege, and also seeing the man's point of view. And I know that this is a feature of women as well. We are educated to be mediators or to submit if the situation comes down. It's just, I like fairness. For me, fairness is very important. And this is why I'm stating both for men and for women, because this from my point of view, from this awareness to be clear and to be as to observe what is really happening, it's a way from here to go to healing, to be open to see. Yes, we have there is a huge lack of privilege as women, but there's also so thank you.
Thank you. Mary, I see Julie's hand up, and I'm also wondering, time-wise, if you want to move towards closing, or would you like to hear Julie?
Yeah, I'd like to hear Julie's comment if she has a quick comment, and then I'd love to get one more question in from the witnesses. I mean, the witnesses have been listening to us for such a long time, and so I really want to make sure that they have a chance to have their voice heard. So Julie, is there something you want to say to what we've been talking about so far? A quick comment.
Thanks. I just noticed in the chat that there was a comment about benevolent sexism, and I wanted to offer the concept of benevolent sexism as being like the kind gestures, the opening the door, the lifting the packages, the doing things for the women and everything. And there's been research that's been done that benevolent sexism is directly, the amount of that is directly correlated with violence against women in a society. So the more violence there is in a society, the more men have a need to protect women because they know what men can do. And so if there's more of that doing things for the women, it's probably because there's been more violence in the society, or there is more violence in the society.
Thanks, Julie. I appreciate that insight. So Robin, is there another question?
Yeah, actually I've got two, and I'm really torn, so I'm going to name them both to at least have named them. One was, in your opinion, what do you think men lose when women have less privilege?
Okay, Robin, let's just take them one at a time. Let's just take them one at a time, and we'll just hear from fewer fish.
Okay.
So what do you, say it again, please.
Great question.
In your opinion, what do you think men lose when women have less privilege?
Okay, and Stephanie's got her hand up. So I'm gonna go with Stephanie and ask for a brief response, and then we'll try to get the other question in.
I have to say that I think for society to be most flourished, all people must have a role to participate. Women are, I don't know, at least 50% of the world. I don't know, perhaps more. When these people lack the resources to contribute fully to our society, imagine what we're losing. So I want to say that I forgot the question.
Yeah, that's okay, Stephanie. The question was, what do you think men are losing?
Oh, so I think men are losing having a better world, a better life, and fulfilling something that we haven't been able to create as a society this far.
Thank you, Stephanie. I just want to add a quick comment that I think men are losing, I think there's a lack of clarity about what their role is and how they can fully live out their own maleness. And I think that's I imagine that's confusing and frustrating and probably scary too.
And Mary, I want to add, and femininity.
And femininity.
You brought up, but you know, mm-hmm. just so much is put on men about expressing their feelings and emotions, for example, and how they're supposed to be and not cry, for example. This is an extension of misogyny. Because if they cry, they're considered female or weak. So any kind of oppression, racism, sexism, homophobia affects everyone in society, including the people who have privilege in those areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Dan. And Robin, let's see if we can get that last question in.
Okay, Stephanie, the question is, as a single woman, I am treated with either pity or as irrelevant or somehow less than because I'm single. Does anyone else here experience this? Because I'm a single woman, does anyone else here experience this?
Right. Yes, at my age, all of my friends pretty much have children and they're all at the same age. You know, they had children at the same time. So they have their little mommy groups and, you know, they're trading tips. And I'm not in on that. When they have get-togethers or get-togethers for the kids, and I'm invited, but not really very interested because I'm not very interested in kids. Trying to get together with the parents alone is difficult. I find that there is no space for me. It feels like there's no space for me to be acknowledged because everyone is focused on what they have in common, is which is having these children playing together, learning and growing at the same time. I wouldn't say I'm ignored. I would say that I'm just not nurtured in the same way as other people are from those relationships.
Thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate how you're bringing in what it means to be a single woman and a woman without children. You know, one of the most powerful ways I've experienced that in my life is there was some furniture, beautiful antique furniture that's been in my family for several generations. And I loved that furniture growing up. And without even checking with me, my mom gave all that furniture away to cousins of mine that had children. And when I asked her about it, she says, oh, well, you don't have any kids, so who are you going to give them to? It was never even a question of, oh, well, maybe I could enjoy them for a while and then give them to one of my second or third cousins. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to bring in around intersectionality briefly. I put this in the chat. It's ironic, even though I'm in a relationship now, and I've been in a relationship for most of my life, I had a partner for 15 years, that just as a lesbian or queer woman, not being with a man, I'm often seen as a single woman. And I see that I have a lack of privilege there. I've been renovating the building that I own. There's been huge challenges, like structural challenges. I repeatedly experienced, I mentioned one story earlier, I'm often aware of how it would be different if I had a husband and the husband was dealing with the male contractors, for example. But I'm perceived as being single even when my girlfriend is here because there's no man to be negotiating, which is usually male contractors. So I could give other examples, but that's just one.
Thank you, Dan. So Robin, is there another burning question? We have, you know, like another minute or two.
Actually, I think, Mary, that there was a question in the chat just recently, and I didn't copy it down, but it was basically a request to summarize the answer to what do men lose when women have less privilege, that went really quickly, and they'd like to hear a summary of that.
Louisa, go ahead.
I can summarize by say what I heard was the ability to be more whole, as in their ability to be allowed to be emotionally and vulnerably whole. And I guess I wanted to add, I'm very tender around the training to be violent and individual and strong that men get, and to be the breadwinners. And I so see the stress and the heart attacks and the life expectancy of so many men being hurt by that pressure on them to be the king of the hill. And it's so sad that they then become sick and more violent, as opposed to being allowed to be whole, which is what I would, you know, I guess keep wanting for myself and all of us.
Thanks, Louisa. I wasn't going to say this, but I'm just having a burning desire to say something. about this issue, and it's so intriguing to me. I think in a way, I talked about this vaguely before about a lack of clarity about what they can offer. So as far as physical strength goes, I do see, generally speaking, not everybody, of course, but generally speaking, I see men as physically stronger than women. And I see huge advantages to that. I actually love the strength that men have. And so when men open a door for me, for instance, if I refuse the door, or if they try to carry my luggage and I refuse that, in a way, I think it can be confusing. Like, that was a way that they could contribute. I just had this happen in one of my classes. There was a young man who wanted to carry my books out. And I said, I had more than books. I had a bunch of stuff. And I said, oh, no, I can get it because I'm pretty good at schlepping. And so, oh, no, I can get it. And then I put it down to continue talking. And my wife picked it up, a big chunk of it. And so he went over to her and said, you know, can I carry that? Because I'm going right with you. I'm parking right next to you out in the parking lot, and I'd be happy to carry it. And she said, oh, no, it's okay, I've got it. And I looked at the look at his face, and I thought, oh, yeah, so that's one of those moments. He was wanting to contribute and to connect. Mm. And I think if I'm always refusing and I'm not allowing that, then I think in a way there's a place where it would be confusing for them to know, how can you contribute? How can they contribute to my life then? Which isn't to say I think men should carry my books, or I need men to carry my books. So this, there's a, like an inner constriction in me around this particular topic. And so I really just felt like I had to say that. So Dion, I'd love to hear from you next. I'd love it if you could do a closing about our fishbowl and what you got out of it, kind of anything around that.
Sure.
In a couple of minutes.
Sure. Well, I'm just noticing how wistful I'm feeling, how much is stirred up for me. I've had numerous opportunities in my life for mourning around this, and you know, other areas too, about white supremacy, and about, you know, how I've been treated as a queer person. But all this has stirred up, so I'm feeling wistful, feeling grateful for everyone sharing. And I think the real elephant in the room for me is a question, and I'm kind of sad that I don't think we have the space to really get to it, is how do these questions turn up in our NVC community? I mean, one thing that stands out for me is when I'm at NVC trainings is how many of the participants tend to be women. Usually proportionally way more higher number of women participants. And then I'm noticing in relation to that, how many of the certified trainers are men. It's kind of an interesting parallel to me about how many women do cooking at home, and then how many professional chefs are men. And I notice in even sharing this, I feel vulnerable. I'm aware of, you know, feminism having, quote, a bad, you know, being a bad word or having a bad reputation, and people who are feminists being male haters or being militant. And I'm so longing for a space for women to be heard around how this has impacted them, and for men to consider with vulnerability how this has impacted their lives, how it affects all of us. Because I really do believe, and I see it even more clearly in this call today, how misogyny and sexism affects all of society. Even so, when, you know, I was so excited in a way when Margaret Thatcher took power in Britain, but I just saw her taking on male behaviors, what I would associate with male uses of power. So how do we bring in feminine qualities in society to benefit all of us? I love that Marshall Rosenberg talks so much about Rhianne Eisler's book, The Chalice and the Blade. And Rhianne Eisler talks about how it's not, you know, a matrilineal culture doesn't mean power over women over men. It means men and women embracing fully the feminine and the masculine, and us all having a more wonderful and fuller life because of that. Mm.
Thank you, Dean. I love your closing words. Yeah, I am wanting to thank the fish for being willing to have this conversation I imagine there were times at least when it was vulnerable speaking up and speaking your truth. I want to thank the witnesses for being here and participating by witnessing and holding space for the conversation by contributing in the chat room. And Deanne, I want to thank you for being my cohort in crime on this as our co-moderator. It's been fun to do this together with you. I am so touched by each of these fishbowls. In different ways, each one has touched me a different way, but I am so touched by them. I'm so happy to be having these conversations. And I want you to know that I see this as a start, not an end. And so I'm happy about that. And I want to remind you that at the end of the conversations, starting June 9th, we're having a conference that will delve into much greater depth this concept of privilege, and what do we mean by privilege, and how does it affect us, and what does it look like? Much more depth in that. And Dee and I are offering a session on women, and many other trainers will be offering sessions. I think I just want to say that I'm enriched. I'm enriched by the conversation today, and I thank you all. So thank you all so much.
Mary, I just want to thank you again and express my gratitude for MIPE and you being a visionary and a vanguard, bringing this conversation into our NVC community. And I just think whatever we believe about a spiritual life, I just can't help but imagining Marshall is somewhere cheering energetically, because I knew his passion for social change and bringing in, you know, how are we meeting our needs as human beings? And how are these privileges and discrimination getting in the way of us fully meeting our needs? So it's a beautiful intersection, in my opinion, of NVC and needs consciousness and social change. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. Bye, everybody.